This is the podcast by the Young China Watchers. We're a global community of young professionals interested in China. We host editorial content on our website, and we organize events with China experts in our 10 chapters around the world. My name is Sam Colomby, and in this episode, I called up Jude Blanchette. He's senior advisor and China practice lead at Crumpton Group, and he's also the author of the forthcoming book, China's New Red Guards, The Return of Radicalism and the Rebirth of Mao Zedong. So today we'll be talking about Neo-Maoism. It's a political movement in China that we as foreign observers tend to overlook, but that nonetheless plays an important part in the way Chinese politics plays out. So, welcome, Jude.
Yeah, well, first of all, yeah, I really appreciate you guys reaching out and doing this. I'm a big fan of the organization, so...
Well, congratulations on the publication of your book. I know it's been a long time in the making.
Yes.
It's coming out in June, right?
Sometime in May it'll be shipping, and with June as the publication.
Can you give us a brief introduction to your research? Like, what did you set out to do?
The book looks at a group of individuals in China who we... know as the Neo-Maoists, but this is a group which has evolved since the early 2000s as an independent political force in China, a story we don't typically think about when we think of China, given the sort of ironclad rule of the Communist Party. We have this idea that China is absent of any politics, but this book is a study of one such group, which emerged out of a concern over mounting problems from China's economic and reform development trajectory. And the group exists to try to ensure that the Communist Party stays on the right road. And so I track the evolution of the group from their founding through to today, in part because I think on their own right, they're an interesting group of individuals. But more importantly, I think for too long, we've effectively avoided understanding voices in China who didn't comport with our own preferred group of voices, you know, those individuals who were advocating for economic liberalization or rule of law. And we avoided the people arguing in the opposite direction. But just as in countries like the UK and the United States, after we saw big policy shifts, you know, the election of Donald Trump in 2016 or Brexit in 2016, we suddenly became aware of this other group of individuals who had been there all along, but we had just ignored. And I think the Neo-Maoists are one such group in China.
So are they of particular relevance today? Because you said that they've been ignored for so long, but is there a particular reason to dig this up now? Is it under Xi, have they become more important?
The research for the book dates back to before Xi Jinping came to power. So this is a phenomenon which is independent of Xi Jinping, but it certainly has relevance today insofar as one of the things we're trying to do now is understand the future trajectory of China. And to do so, obviously, it's important to understand how Xi Jinping sees the world and how his supporters see the world. And the Neo-Maoists remain one of the most steadfast supporters of Xi Jinping. And as we have this discussion about, you know, is Xi Jinping going to turn out to be consolidating power so that way he can drive reform? One group which has never harbored any doubts about where Xi Jinping stands on the important issues are the Neo-Maoists. They've always seen him as a reliable ally on behalf of party control of a more traditional orthodox ideology that adheres to the party's central role in China, a strong national defense, strong control over the economy, and a robust place for role for state-owned enterprises. So Neo-Maoists have been a fairly good harbinger of where China is headed. That's why I think it's important that we understand groups like the Neo-Maoists, because again, China has constituencies, even within a one-party state. I think it's important we just have a more complex discussion about what animates China's political and ideological discussions.
Now, from what I understand, the Neo-Maoists seem to be pretty much aligned with the direction that Xi is taking China in, right? Because you were saying in the 90s under Zhu Rongji, they were in a real panic with the direction that China was heading. And now they seem to be much more on the same page as Xi Jinping. Is that correct? Or is there still quite a big difference between the way they would like to see China progress.
Yeah, and I think that's an important element of this story is 10 years ago, if we were to talk about the neo-Maoists, we would be discussing almost a dissident organization, one that occupied a space to the left flank of the Communist Party. And so you look at the 2000s, you see a ratcheting up of hostility between neo-Maoist organizations and the administration of Hu Jintao and Wen Jiabao, an extreme disappointment with the trajectory that China was taking on a range of issues, and increasingly aggressive calls for change by the neo-Maoists. This obviously reached its peak during the period of Bo Xilai, when the neo-Maoists were actively supporting Bo as a political figure and as someone who could take their agenda nationwide by Bo Xilai's hoped-for entrance into the Politburo Standing Committee. Obviously, things didn't quite work out that way. But that would have been our story of the neo-Maoists 10 years ago. Whereas very quickly after Xi Jinping came to power, the group emerged as a more compliant, supportive movement. And again, for the reasons I mentioned before, because they saw in Xi Jinping somebody they could work with. Also, I think because Xi Jinping opened up new spaces for the neo-Maoists to channel their anger. Rather than channeling it towards the party state, Xi unleashed them on sort of China's liberal intellectual class. This happened through campaigns against historical nihilism. This happened through campaigns against Western values and constitutionalism. That opened up a space for the neo-Maoists to use the tools and the skills that they had accumulated over the past decade or so and to bring them to bear against intellectual elite. So we've seen a real constriction of the public square in China since Xi Jinping came to power. One thing I think it's important to point out is we shouldn't overestimate the actual power of groups like neo-Maoists. When the party believes you're a security threat, it'll shut you down, even if you are, you know, holding up a banner of Mao Zedong. It's not that the neo-Maoists have any necessary power over the Communist Party. I think it's because Xi Jinping has recognized that in the neo-Maoists, there's a potentially helpful political ally who can police some of the ideological boundaries in the online space in a way that's probably more effective than some of the brute force tactics that party censors can bring to bear.
So it's more the party leadership using the neo-Maoists as they see fit, rather than the neo-Maoists as a grassroots pressure group deciding which direction China should go.
Yeah, exactly.
So who is holding the reins in this relationship?
I think we tend to, when we look at independent actors in China, whether they're, you know, the Ai Weiwei's or the Liu Xiaobo's of the world, or on the other side, the sort of the neo-Maoists, or, you know, this currently right now, there's this movement of Marxist student groups who are helping workers surrounding a factory called JASIC, which is down in Guangdong. We tend to overemphasize the sort of people power of these movements. And while they certainly there's a cost to crushing these movements, the party has shown repeatedly that it's willing to pay that price if it feels there's a threat to its underlying security. I don't think that's the thread we should be pulling on. Rather, I think the thread we should be pulling on is understanding what the relative autonomy some of these groups are given to act. What does that tell us about the party's own perspective on the public square? And to me, it reaffirms what now I think is completely undeniable, which is that the regime under Xi Jinping is one of the most politically orthodox and conservative that has been in power in China for really any time over the past four decades.
You've previously made a distinction between the Baohuanpai and the Zaofanpai, sort of the conservative wing and the rebellious wing of the neo-Maoists. Does that distinction not hold up anymore then?
Certainly the distinction, the categorical distinction exists. And insofar as describing elements of capital N, capital M neo-Maoism, there are distinct strains of a more radical grassroots version and the more organized elite version. What's different now, I think, though, is the grassroots Zhao Fan Pai rebellious strain really is finding not much room to maneuver now, partly because the party state has recognized some of the organizing potential of the Zhao Fan Pai, who look to more actively oppose the party state rather than influence the party state, which is what the elite or the Bao Huang Pai tend to do. But a lot of the grassroots organizations just don't exist anymore and have been shuttered, marginalized, constrained, and contained. But it's important to understand that those two strains are there, partly because that's a key strain of Maoism, is just the more radical storm the barricades, rectify the party vision is very much there within Mao himself. So that will always animate some elements of the new Maoist movement.
Yeah, I was going to ask. So you say that the party under Xi is turning more conservative, turning back to sort of old school Maoism. But so much of Maoism is that perpetual struggle. And that is obviously something that the party does not want to see in its ranks, does not want to see in its subjects. So how does Xi Jinping square that Mao with his own goals?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that's one where you notice we don't have a lot of clarity when we talk about the significance of Mao Zedong in contemporary China. We talk about Xi Jinping having sort of resurrected or resuscitated Mao's legacy. But as you rightfully point out, he's not resuscitating all of Mao's legacy. He's certainly not calling for actual Red Guards to be fighting actual physical battles in the streets of China. He's not talking for the people to rise up and struggle against errant party leaders. This is a much more ordered, constrained, managed type of Maoism, which was really only trying to keep alive the symbolic Maoism, tying together the founding of the country, taking a country which was, you know, the sick man of Asia, poor, depressed, under the heel of imperial powers, and raising it up to be an independent nation with nuclear weapons and one that can, stand up to other global powers. And Mao Zedong is obviously important for that symbolically. He was the one who said, you know, in September, just a month before the founding of the country, you know, China has stood up. So that sense of national pride and purpose. That type of Mao is absolutely one to be celebrated. The Mao who led the Red Army against the Japanese in World War II, that Mao is to be celebrated. The Mao who helped found the Communist Party, you know, now entering what, its 98th year? But we don't celebrate the Mao after 1958, the Great Leap Forward Mao, the Cultural Revolution Mao. You know, interestingly enough, if you look at the selected works of Mao Zedong, the final volume, volume 5, ends in 1957. This has always been something that the party has been navigating, not just Xi Jinping, is how do we talk about Mao that both protects him as a vital national icon, but at the same time obscures or avoids the more sensitive elements of Mao Zedong. And where they've always run into trouble is when individuals like the neo-Maoist 10 or so years ago, or like the Zhao Fan Pai, resurrect and hold high the later year Mao, the Mao of storm the barricades, the Mao of, you know, who said Zhao Fan Yuli, to revolt is right. So that's a perpetual struggle. And one of the ways they've been doing that is just by really trying to control the public square and just ensure that the Mao that's talked about is the Mao who's conducive to their rule rather than one who can challenge it.
So turning towards the future, because like you said, we'll soon have the 100-year anniversary of the Communist Party. So how do you see the role of the neo-Maoists evolve? What are some of the key, the Bao Huan Pai in government, some of the key players that we need to keep an eye out for?
Yeah, looking to the future, I suspect the role that neo-Maoism has played will continue to evolve away from critics of China's reform trajectory to what has been the case over the past couple of years, police of the online intellectual space. There are no neo-Maoists in power. And I don't think we should expect or look for an explicit neo-Maoist in power. But that doesn't mean they're not going to play an important role for affecting how China's public square evolves, or it seems to be the case, devolves. If we want to redefine neo-Maoism as a sort of orthodox view of the role of the party, well, then we can expect a lot more neo-Maoists in power, just because that's the way the party is increasingly viewing itself and its role in China. You know, when Xi Jinping said north, south, east, west, center, the party controls everything, I suppose you could say that's a really core neo-Maoist perspective. So in that case, we'll see lots of neo-Maoists in power, but I think more strictly speaking, in terms of neo-Maoist intellectuals or writers, they probably won't be getting too close to politics.
Coming to the final question then, something for our audience specifically as China watchers, what are your recommendations for people working in this field, were people looking at ideology in China? What advice do you have for us?
Well, one is it's just great to hear that there are people doing that. That was obviously one of the areas we began to ignore for a long time, is the structure of ideas in China and the role of ideas in China. You know, there's a multitude of voices, albeit in increasingly constrained ways. To me, the most important thing as we look at this is really trying to make sure we have a good grasp of the context within which these ideas are being transmitted and to whom. Oftentimes we ignore or belittle certain ideological constructs that are put forth because they seem irrelevant, erroneous, or silly to us. But often is the case, there's a pretty clear constituency for these ideas. As we look at the role of ideas in China, I think really working hard to understand as much as possible on its own native terms, what is the context for these ideas? What is the audience for these ideas? And when you read something like the People's Daily and you see sometimes what look like absurd headlines, I just always try to think, what's the signal being sent here? Because there is a signal being sent. That's my sort of short advice for people who look at this stuff.
So what would be a good place for us to start? Any reading that we can do that sort of can put this all into context? Beside your own book, of course. Anything that we can, when we read Xinhua or China Daily, anything that we can refer to sort of understand what's really going on?
So I'm sure a lot of your readers will have already done this, but I would say Alice Miller's final essay as the editor of the China Leadership Monitor would be a very good place to start, where she talks about some of the ways in which we can interpret the written word and ideology in China. So I would say that's a really good place to start. The second one I'd say is for people who don't follow him, William A. Callahan, I think, is a really fantastic observer of China. He's at University of Manchester, but has really written some fantastic stuff. A book off the top of my head that I would recommend from him is called China Dreams, 20 Visions for the Future, 20 Visions of the Future. He is a really close and careful observer of China's intellectual debates. I would recommend that folks read his work.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time and for sharing all that knowledge with us. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention? Any events coming up? Any talks that you'd like to share with us?
Trying to think if there's anything good that you guys wouldn't already be picking up on. Oh, Julia Lovell, her book on global Maoism is coming out. I've read it in galleys, and it's fantastic. It's just called Maoism: A Global History. For those in the UK, get it. For those in the US, it's coming in September. So look out for that.
Great. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Jim. Really appreciate you reaching out and doing this.
Jude Blanchett's book, China's New Red Guards, will be published on the 3rd of June. It's already available for pre-order on Amazon. I'd like to thank Jude for taking the time to speak with Young China Watchers. For more information on our organization, go to youngchinawatchers.com. Find out where your nearest chapter is and come meet up with us. Thank you for listening. My name is Sam Colomby, and the music in this episode is by Blue Dot Sessions.